This sounds was recorded on the 13th of April, 1952, medium Leslie Flint. Now we're all set. That's recording. That's the right speed. Everything in the garden's up.
Oh, that's wonderful, isn't it?
Now we relax.
Saves me getting a nervous breakdown. Oh, lugging that thing along, you see. Really, it was a trial.
You've got quite a number of poems already booked, haven't you, Mrs.?
Yes, I have. I was going to ask you about one or two more, but you're getting so terribly booked up, aren't you?
Well, I'm only doing a limited amount of work because I can't do any more, you see, and in consequence, I am getting booked, and I'm getting a lot of Americans now, because I always do in the summer.
Yes.
From about the end of April, I get heavily booked with Americans and Canadians and South America, South Africans and
it must be
all
lovely.
Abroad. A terrific number.
Yes. They must be awfully thrilled.
Yes. It's amazing, really, that... Well, of course, it's word of mouth. People talk about my work, and then they say,
yes,
can I come, you know?
Well, I maintain, you see, that one direct voice sounds like this is worth a dozen, from the point of view of evidence, isn't it?
Yes.
On the whole, do most people have good results, too?
I think so, yes. I think by far and away the vast majority have very good results. Occasionally a sitting isn't quite up to scratch, and occasionally little or nothing happens at all. But that's to be expected.
Of course, I mean, that if the people on the other side are not perhaps ready to communicate it.
There's so many things that can affect the sounds, you see.
Of course, yes.
We just sit here and we're inclined... not to take it for granted exactly, but being so used to getting a good sitting that if one gets a poor one or nothing comes at all, one's rather taken back. But
yes.
After all, I think it's amazing that we do get anything.
Oh, and yes, it is.
To always expect it is rather asking too much.
Well, yes. Are you going away for the weekends?
No, dear, not at the moment.
No.
No.
Well, I think that would be your salvation, being in London.
Well, I agree with you, it would be, but you know, it's extraordinary how much it costs to go away for a weekend.
Yes.
And quite honestly, it's as much as I do now, just to keep my head above water.
It must be.
You see, this place costs me... I've got to earn £20 before I can clear myself with this place, you see. A flat in town like this, you know, it costs money.
I'm sure it does.
And if I were to move, I wouldn't really do any better for myself. I'd probably do worse.
Yes.
And my headache is now, it's just a matter of existing. I mean, just paying my bills as best I can,
yes.
You know. Things are very bad.
Yes.
The point is that if I could do the extra work that I used to do, you see, I used to... be able to, that made all that difference to me.
Yes.
I used to have no real financial headaches, but now it's just one big headache after another. I get clear of one set of bills and I'm faced up with another big set, you see.
Yes.
It's what put me back too, I was ill last year for 3 months, I didn't do a stroke.
Yes.
What little bit I had got saved went. So now I'm just existing from week to week.
Yes. Yes. It's very trying, especially in this work when you really need to be, to have a quiet mind, don't you?
Still. A bill came in this morning for electricity for nearly £25.
Yeah.
Just for electricity, you see, for 3 months. That's just one item. Still.
I hope something will happen that things will change for you.
Well, goodness knows what. I can't imagine anything. I manage, you know, it's a sort of gradual sort of, oh dear, well, I've got over that hurdle, now what's the next one? It's all right for 3 months until the bills start rolling in, and then that hurdle's got to be faced. You know?
Yes.
Living in town, in this flat, is very, very expensive.
Oh, it must be. See, we think 2 guineas for a flat is a lot, by the sea.
Good heavens. 2 guineas?
Oh,
that would be a gift. Mm-hmm. That would be an absolute gift. A flat like this in town costs about 10, 14, 15 guineas a week. You know.
Yes.
Just the rent. For one single room, furnished single room, £4.10, 5 guineas, you know.
Is it really? Then getting about expensive, isn't it? Even crossing London.
Shocking. I always thought flats at the seaside are expensive.
Yes, well, it's just that mine is high up, and I think the higher you go, the
cheaper it gets.
Yes.
It means a lot of stairs were to climb.
It does, yes.
Are you facing the sea?
No, I can just see it in the distance. Although I'm really only 5 minutes from the sea, I'm rather hidden. Actually, I think the country is nicer if you're near the sea. I think trees are so lovely.
I agree, yes.
Mrs. Cook.
Very well, thank you, Mickey. Thank you
nice
for coming.
Nice to see you again.
Nice to see you.
Are you keeping well?
Yes, I'm pretty well, thank you.
What's the crowd of people around you? Although your chief communicator is your husband, there's always a lot of other people.
Oh, I'm so pleased to know that.
I'm your chief communicator. I say.
Yes?
And I am your chief communicator.
Yes, please, always.
According to his lordship. Very true, actually. Of course, there are lots of other people around, but they very seldom get an opportunity to come and speak.
No, I suppose they're on different wavelengths, are they?
Actually, the whole point is that on an occasion like this, invariably crowds of people are attracted, people that would naturally, if they could, get into touch with their own people. But there's always those who have charge of the whole affair, and they sort of keep the others in the background.
Yes.
Because after all, it is our affair.
Yes, I remember your telling me about that, having a sort of cordon and light.
If only people on your side could realize the number of souls that are endeavoring and anxious indeed to make a contact with friends and people on earth. If only they realize how very close at times their loved ones are to them. It would make such a difference if they understood this truth.
Yes, it would.
The more and more I think about this, the more I know, the more I realize, the more I feel that if only this truth were universally accepted, if all peoples understood, it would make such a vast difference. I'm quite sure that the world would be very much altered.
Yes, I think so, dear.
I thought you'd like to know that your mother is here today.
Oh, I'm so pleased.
She sends all her love and blessings. I believe there's some anniversary just about now.
There's one coming and one has gone. I don't know.
Well, there was one in March and
yes,
there's another
that's right.
one in May.
Yes.
And there's one in June and there's one in August too.
Yes. Hello, darling. You've got your father near too, haven't you?
Why do you say that?
Because you've got your slightly Scottish accent.
Yes, it's an extraordinary thing, that, and I was wondering if you would notice it.
Because I did immediately.
When I first spoke to you, I was not conscious of any accent at all. But now my father is standing here right beside me to give me that power which I need when I communicate with you, and I'm conscious of the fact that I'm taking from him something which no doubt is coming to you to some extent in my voice.
Yes, it's very interesting there.
How
it has on two occasions.
You see, the whole point is, and people will never realize this on your side, at least I doubt if many people will, that all life is in a sense fluidic. By that I mean that the mental world in which we exist and in which you exist is a fluidic thing. You talk about your physical bodies, you talk about your independence, you talk about your being a separate entity and all that, which is true to a point. But you see, you're only skimming the surface of things. The real self and the real personality is the mental one. And this in itself, although it has its own separate individuality to a point, and it reproduces itself through the physical body when you're on earth, it does not alter the fact that it is, in a sense, a fluidic thing, inasmuch that we are all open to receive impressions, thoughts from people all around and about us. In other words, we are, in a sense, in essence, fluidic, inasmuch that our thoughts are not necessarily one exactly, because we differ even obviously in our thoughts and our interpretation of things, but the point is that we receive all the time. It's like a wireless set, as if every individual were a receiving station, and that they are picking up here, picking up there, all sorts of things that are in the atmosphere. We're all part and parcel of each other. When humanity realizes that we are all part of each other, we're all part of a tremendous universe, in the truest sense of the term, of the word, that we're all independent and dependent upon each other. It's an extraordinary thing. For instance, I'm talking to you, but as I'm speaking to you, through my voice to you are coming all sorts of thoughts, not only from myself and my own experience, but thoughts of other souls that are standing around, impinging themselves, interpreting all sorts of things. I'm merely, as it were, the vessel. I'm merely the receiving station, as it were, for many people.
Yes, that's very interesting, dear.
You see, if only people can realize that in communication, we do not only ourselves convey our own thoughts and our own ideas and our own experiences and our own evidence for that matter, but at the same time, we can and we do, sometimes fully conscious about it, other times almost unconsciously, we're receiving and sending out. It's like wireless signals, it's going out all the time.
Yes. Well, that's very interesting.
When humanity realizes how dependent it is, one upon the other, how, although you may retain or develop an individual character and personality, which is good and which of course is the reason for being on earth, at the same time we are all part and parcel of each other. We are all, in a sense you might say, developing from other people's experiences, not only our own but other people's.
Yes,
that's why it's so important when you're on earth to realize that in every sense
you are a part of the human race in the sense that you are receiving and you are giving out all the time. That's why, for instance, no matter how appalling a person may be, you must still remember that in some measure you are part of that person, and that person is part of you. No matter how greatly they may have sinned, how low they may have become, it behoves indeed for every individual to endeavor to exert and to make possible, if one can, that person's redemption. We're all responsible one to another.
Yes, I see that point very much, darling. Now, will spring's rarely come, I think. The primroses and violets and
yes.
Trees are bursting into leaf.
Yes.
I wondered if you would like to comment on the message of Easter as you see it from your point of vantage.
Well, obviously, the vital and most important, and indeed one might say the real message of Easter is the resurrection.
Yes.
Obviously. You have it symbolized in Christ, and I use the word and emphasize it symbolized, which may not please a lot of people, but it's true. The
yes.
symbol of the resurrection is far more important than any other aspect of the whole of life's, of Christ's life. If he had not come back from the dead, if he had not appeared unto his disciples and others, there could have been no Christian faith. There could have been no realization of his message, the purport of his life and existence. In fact, it all boils down to the fact of the resurrection. That is the vital crux of the whole of his teachings, all of his life.
Yes, and the fact that it is natural law, of course, for us all to do the same.
Of course it's natural law. And at the same time, although it's natural law, the very fact that he was able to, what the world, the earth world, imagines or thinks, he was able to break natural law. You see, the point is that we know, you know, that what God Christ achieved was within natural law, was because of natural law, but the majority of people on earth, even religiously minded people, assume that Christ broke natural law. He overcame natural law. And in consequence, because they don't understand it, they refer to it as a miracle, which of course it is not. There's no such a thing as a miracle. A miracle is only something which you do not understand and comprehend, and therefore to you it's a miracle. But once you realize that all these so-called miracles are within the boundary, within the range of natural law, that, I think, is vital and important for people to realize, that Christ was not unique in that. So many people think, oh, that he was unique, that he overcame death. But every human being that ever was overcomes death. There's nothing unique in that. And untold millions of people, and not necessarily people who are within the spiritualistic world, for that matter, that is, people who've been communicating to others through mediums. I don't mean that exactly. The point of what I'm trying to convey is that untold numbers of people have returned from the dead, have been seen by people who are not spiritualists and not spiritualistically inclined, in fact, would be appalled at the whole idea. In other words, thousands of people have been seen at different times, at different places, before and since the passing of Christ. Christ coming back was by no means unique,
yes.
Which the Church, of course, endeavours to express that it was.
Yes, I know. That used to be the hope.
I mean, you know and I know, and the majority of people know, even though they discard the theory and the idea, that many, many, there are so many well-authenticated cases of so-called ghosts being seen different times, different places, and being seen not by one person, but sometimes several people at the same time, and people of integrity, people who've got no axe to grind, people who do not believe in this sort of thing at all, have seen and experienced these things. There's nothing unique in it. It's not breaking a natural law.
Yeah.
It's within natural law.
Yes.
You see, once people can realize and accept Christ in the real sense, and get rid of all this mystery, this mythological trappings walls that they put round him and obscured him. You see, Christ was human. Christ was a reality in the sense that any human being is a reality. He was born in a natural, normal way, but he was, from his earliest infancy, there's no doubt, very much in tune, very much in harmony with the things of the Spirit. He was very much guided, very much led by the Spirit, and he was very conscious of the power of the Spirit, and he had all the spiritual faculties and gifts of which St. Paul speaks. There's nothing unusual, nothing miraculous. Once one can get rid of this miraculous conception, this miraculous idea of the Christ, when one can realize how human, how very real he was, and what a wonderful character he was, in a material sense as well as a spiritual one, when you can see Christ truly and properly and clearly, without all the nonsense, a lot of it that's been written around him and built around him, he becomes a reality, he becomes something and someone that one can see, one can understand, one feels that he is related, that he is human, and one can then endeavor to be like him, and then one can do eventually, there's no reason why one shouldn't do the things that he said that we should do. All this business of placing him on this sort of peculiar pedestal, and I don't wish to think that I'm decrying in any way, far from it. What I'm trying to say is that when we accept the humanity of Christ, the reality of Christ, in the material as well as the spiritual sense, he becomes a reality and we can follow him, we can become something like him at least. And as he said, greater things than these shall you do, for I go unto my Father. If he were God incarnate, do you think for one moment that we could do greater things than God? Because that's what it would imply.
Yes. Can we use the name Jesus of Nazareth instead of Christ?
I don't think that
would be all right, because there are so many Christs.
I don't think it really matters.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it matters one jot whether you refer to Christ as Jesus Christ or Jesus of Nazareth.
And he wouldn't wish us to concentrate on the horrors of the cross as on Good Friday, would he?
No, of course not.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so much of it... In any case, surely, common sense tells one that the whole life of Christ followed natural law. I mean, if a man sets himself up as Christ, I don't say that he set himself up, but he was set up in a sense. And in a sense, of course, he contributed to what followed. I mean, he was a man of obvious great courage, great integrity, a man who believed in his mission, a man who thought little of the material things and therefore less of his life as such. And in consequence, what followed the crucifixion was bound to happen. If it hadn't been the crucifixion, it would have been death in some other form. But since it was the manner in those days for political prisoners particularly, and they looked upon Christ as a sort of political prisoner, and I don't think people realize that. The whole setup of Christ was one who opposed authority. He couldn't do otherwise with the mission that he had, the things that he said. Anyone who set themselves up or was set up by their followers was bound to come to that sort of end. You see, it was all natural law. It was all working within natural law.
I suppose you've been able to see the history of... Jesus Christ and the history of the church in the ether, have you? You were always, on earth interested in these.
Christ did not come to form a religion. And
no.
I think that people should get that firmly implanted in their mind, that obviously Christ did not come to form a religion. Man formed the religion, and we know the result of it over the centuries. I'm not so saying that a lot of good didn't also come from it.
Yes, we might have lost sight, of Jesus otherwise, wouldn't it? Without the church, don't you think, and his example?
I know this may sound an appalling thing to say, that many, many people have been messiahs. Christ was by no means the only one. I'm not saying that Christ wasn't the greatest, inasmuch that he achieved more, because he was obviously more in tune, more in harmony with the power of the Spirit, and was was able to demonstrate the power of the Spirit, and because he had souls who followed him and who continued in his footsteps. I think it is the fact that his disciples and others followed him and continued and suffered in consequence, which was bound to happen, that this religious body or group of bodies was formed. The early disciples, the early Christians, were totally and absolutely unlike Christians today.
Yes.
They were people who really had tremendous faith and who endeavored with every fibre of their being to become like Christ, as he said they should become. And they did achieve what the world would term today miracles, though they're not recorded. But the early Christians, when they met, conducted what you would call most seances.
Yes,
they were in communication.
Talking about that last time, yes.
The church lost the way centuries ago, when the church became powerful, became materialistic. In fact, there was a period when the church was far more materialistic than ever it was spiritual. And when the people in power in the church demanded and taxed the peoples and took monies and properties and land, and you have the remnants of it today, of course. The
yes.
church is powerful in a material sense. In fact, I'd go as far as to say the church is far more powerful materially with its stocks and its shares and its land and what have you, and with the Catholic Church in particular, is much more materially powerful than ever it is spiritually. And you see, Christ was not concerned with material power, was not concerned with buildings, with property, with accumulation of wealth, the accumulation of vast treasures. You see, it's so opposite to all that Christ preached.
Yes. Would your guide, darling, you know, that wonderful monk, would he be in sympathy with all that's being said?
Of course he would now.
Yes.
You see, my dear, common sense, any, whatever way you wish to look at this, surely, even those who are so in themselves within the church, you might say, if they think deeply and humbly and sincerely on these points, they must come to the conclusion that it is wrong to accumulate and to amass wealth, material wealth. It's so opposed to Christ.
Yes,
and
yes.
All his teachings.
Yes.
Besides,
well, I can understand it, but I've always had rather unorthodox views, I'm afraid. They don't, in any of the things you say, I'm afraid, don't stagger me at all. I don't know why it is.
Probably would stagger a lot of people who listen to
Yes, it may be, yes, but I suppose I've always been what you call fluidic, is it?
Yes.
I keep an open mind.
One could go on and on. On this point.
Yes. Now, darling, can we come from the sublime to the ridiculous, shall
what
we say?
Is that?
Now, I do want to know about the animal kingdom on your side. You know, so often when you come through, you bring either a nice cat or a little dog is trotting by your side, and
yes.
It's awfully nice, you know.
Yes.
Can you tell me, do they survive onto the various planes?
Well, naturally. I speak for myself in this. One does not like to imply that animals, or any form of life for that matter, is on a lower plane. But one has to accept the fact, and it's the truth, that the animal kingdom has not quite reached the level, certain aspects of the animal kingdom certainly haven't reached the level of the human race. But animals that we've taken to be with us as pets over generations of time, they have become much more humanized. I put it like that, although it's not a good word to use in a sense. Animals are far more intelligent than we give them credit for.
Yes.
Though they may not be able to speak to us, they are conscious of our thoughts. You see, there again we come to this fluidic mental side of life, which the world ignores so much. Point is that an animal, a pet cat, a pet dog, even a canary, they are conscious of our thoughts. I don't mean to say that they're conscious in the sense they understand everything that we try to convey, but they know instinctively, if you like, I use the word instinctively, although it's not the word I really want, they are conscious of us and
yes.
what we are feeling and thinking, and they are in sympathy and much more developed, for instance, than an animal, shall we say, a cow, or a buffalo, or some other, a lion, for instance.
Yes.
Because they have lived away from mankind, away to a great extent, more in the jungle, in the case of lions and so on, and in natural surroundings, not been in contact with human beings, and
yes.
in fact in fear of human beings. And in consequence, they have not progressed in the same sense.
I see. So they couldn't survive, really.
So those animals do not survive as animals. But that's something, that dynamic something, which is there again on the mental plane, for a short time does exist. And it is possible, and indeed it is so, that these animals do live in a mental plane, which is a kingdom entirely of its own, for a time.
I see. Is that very interesting, dear? For instance, all the poor animals that are slaughtered for food, what happens to their etheric bodies?
Their etheric bodies disintegrate.
Oh.
They have no form of life as we understand it.
Oh, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. A number of people
but you
have
see,
been wondering
you
about
see, the
that.
The point is that this something which we call life, for the want of a better word, is something which is indestructible. What gives it shape? I mean, the thing that we call body or shape, I'm referring now to the psychic or spiritual body, doesn't exist in the lower animal kingdom. But the life, the vitality, still exists in another form.
Yes, I see.
The same as you take the spring, a tree blossoms and bears fruit, goes through changes. It's only affected by time in a material sense. But the point is that the essence of the tree, even when the tree withers and dies, as it seems, still, in some measure, contributes to life in another form.
Yes.
Nothing is lost. You see, anything that has life can never be lost. It continues. It comes perhaps in another form, in a material sense, and then it dies and comes again in another form, and perhaps eventually will emerge in another form of life, which will then be perpetuated through time. It's difficult to explain this, but the human person has gone through many, many stages of evolution. At one time, it had no shape, no form. Then gradually it began to assume shape and form. Gradually it began to take upon itself something that you might even now recognize as human. You see, but this
yes.
has taken millions and millions and millions of years.
Yes.
When people talk about the end of the world, these foolish religious people particularly, say the end of the world is coming on a certain date and we all gather together, the whole thing is so fantastically ridiculous. Because we know that the world, not only this world in which you live, but other worlds of which you have little or no knowledge, which are outside your world, they are indestructible. Because you cannot destroy something which is not possible to destroy. It's unchangeable. It's something which must go on. It's the very law of the universe.
Yes, I see. Well, just to return to the animals for one moment, darling, well, would you find these domestic animals on, say, the third and fourth sphere, or are they just near the earth?
These third and fourth spheres I find... I suppose they must be, they must say something of the similar, some sort of nature, otherwise you wouldn't grasp anything. But there are no demarcation lines between these spheres, and they're all intermingled. But the animal kingdom, depending on the individual animal, of course, it depends so much.
Yes,
if that animal has been an old, I was going to use the expression old soul.
Oh.
But what I'm trying to convey is that even animals can be very much old, inasmuch as they've had many incarnations.
Well, that's very interesting, dear.
And some become so humanized, there's any way I can put this, it all sounds very odd, but I can't do it any other way, that they do continue. And then they continue as animals. You see, the point is this, what I wish I could convey to you is that we are living in a mental and spiritual world. When an animal, such as a pet animal, a dog, for instance, comes here, then because you, as an individual, are no longer restricted by material conditions, and you begin to realize more about this thought force and thought power and thought transference and this world of mind and spirit, the animal, which has known that, when the human being didn't, that's an extraordinary thing. Though man has progressed in so many ways, the animal in some senses is more conscious of the reality of the mental world and the spiritual world than the human being. For instance, an animal, a dog or a cat, may see clairvoyantly, as you would say,
yes.
Spirits. Mm-hmm. That animal is more sensitized. It hears sounds beyond your range. You see, the animal is more conscious in many respects than the human being. And therefore, when that animal comes here, that animal is coming to a state of being to some extent to which it is not so strange. And it can transmit its thoughts so that you can know what the animal's thinking. And the animal knows even more clearly what you are thinking.
Yes,
because
yes.
Here we're living in a world of thought where words are not necessary. And we can communicate by thought. So therefore, we're much more in tune with the animals, and they're more in tune with us, and we can converse, put it like that,
yes.
In a mental sense.
Oh, that's very interesting, dear. Do you know, I find more and more in what you say as I write your talks out. Because
well,
it doesn't all sink in
at the time. Well, of course, it all has to be sorted out.
It's very interesting,
and I'm sort
yes.
of talking off the cuff, as it were, without any sort of notes, you know, not that one would have notes, I would say, but, you know, I feel that sometimes I could have said something a little better than I did, or put it differently. In fact, I realize that there are many things that I would like to speak about more fully.
Yes.
Different things I've sort of just touched the fringe of.
Yes.
We shall come to that gradually.
Yes.
And you've obviously sorted all out, and as you are doing, and things that you can put down verbatim, and others you have to sort of rearrange and so on. But anyway, it's pretty
yes,
good.
Well, thank you
done.
Very much,
I have to go, dear.
Yes.
I was waiting. But I do look forward to this.
Yes.
I only wish to goodness I could talk more often than I do, and I'm grateful for the opportunities I do have, obviously. Well, I must go. All my love and blessings.
Yes, same to you, darling.
I look forward to seeing you again. So love from us all.
Yes, thank
God
you.
God bless. Bye-bye, dear.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Marvellous.
Yes,
today.
Wasn't he?
Goodness me.
Yes. Wonderful flow, hasn't it?
Terrific.
Yes.
Never eases up.
No.
Just get on.
Does it tire you having someone?
No. I'd much rather have someone like that who's interesting and informative than that some of the boring things I have to listen to.
Oh.
Which I do find wearing.
Well, some of them have been awfully interesting, you know. I don't think... I'm going to try to steer clear of religion for a bit, because I think we now know all about them.